Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to Nightlight, everybody. Thanks for joining me today. It's going to be a really exciting show, as they all are when we have Mary Joyce on with us. My thanks first to Ken Quiet Hawk for his intro. Please check him out on the internet. He's a native storyteller, and if you've not ever experienced the native storytelling process, it's an amazing way of keeping track of history and cosmology, and it's a great way to pass information from generation to generation to generation. Certainly better than the written word, and it certainly came about before the written word, so it's something everybody should be aware of at the very, very least. Mary is with me again today, and I am so excited that she is doing a show with us once a month. She is the editor of one of the most amazing websites out there. She's the editor of Skyships Over Cashiers, and it's a fabulous website. She has done it for a long time, and on the website are decades of archives that you can check into and see all of the material that she has been fascinated by, done research by, and put up on her website. I love the fact that she is a true reporter, in that she checks things out before she puts them up on her website, so that you can be very sure that even though some of it may seem very strange, she has made sure that it is as accurate as she can possibly absolutely make it. And she finds topics that are so eclectic that you know, from UFOs to unicorns and everything in between. And her fascination for all sorts of different topics is very evident when you look at the website. It's a joy to read, and as are the four books that she has also published. So please check them out on Amazon and check out her website, but wait until the end of the show, please, because as fascinating as the website is, she is even more so. So welcome to the show, Mary.
Hi, it's always good to talk to you. How you doing?
Oh, I love talking to you. I've been doing great. And your suggestion for going into the little people for today's show topic was a really great one. And, you know, when people say little people, everybody thinks of midgets and dwarves. And that's not what you're talking about. So let's get it right out here on the table, exactly what the little people are that you're talking about.
Well, you and I have talked before, and I'm sure that your listeners can find it in the archives. We've talked about my book called Cherokee Little People Were Real. And this time I'm going to tell you that if I had known as much now then as I do now, the book title would have been slightly different because it was in the past tense. Cherokee Little People Were Real. Because I came out with this book, people realized that I was taking the subject seriously, and I've been able to connect with people and their stories and their witness accounts and sometimes even evidence of little people living today. So I thought it would be kind of nice to focus on that, and if anybody wants to find out about the original book, again, it's got, Cherokee Little People Were Real, and I know you have a show in your archives about it, so they could look for
Absolutely.
It there.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I thought I'd just start out with one of the fun little stories that I got from a woman when I talked to her. She was 29 at the time, very shy Cherokee woman. She never would have talked to me if we hadn't had a mutual friend. And that mutual friend testified that I, you know, was above board and honest and all that, so she decided she would talk to me. And she told me several stories, and one of them I thought was especially cute. Her family keeps a trailer up in a remote part of the reservation, and they use that when they have family picnics and get-togethers, and they use the trailer to cook in and to also use it for the restroom. Well, at the time when this woman was a young girl, they were out. The kids were out there playing hide-and-go-seek, and she decided on one occasion that she would go hide in the shower of the trailer. So she goes in there, she pulls back the curtain, and there's and I'll say this in her words, he looked like a man, a tiny man. He was toddler size. He was wearing jeans and had dark hair that was straight cut like Mowgli from the Jungle Book. And so he just jumped out and gave her a great big grin, scared her to death. She went running to her daddy. But I thought that was an experience that was emblazoned in her memory, and I thought the description of the little man looking like Mowgli from the Jungle Book is something that many people can relate to.
Uh-huh.
And that
well,
wasn't her only
too.
Story.
Oh, my.
Yeah, she actually gave me three. And she has an aunt and uncle that live in Snowbird, North Carolina. This is even more remote than the reservation, which really isn't remote anymore. And there are more full-blood Cherokee living in Snowbird than there are on the reservation, if it gives you an idea of how different it is. So
wow.
She was going to visit her aunt and uncle down there. And her uncle, I don't know how he got up to this point, but he said he just put flour all over, I think it was the kitchen floor. And he said, just wait until morning. And so the next morning, this is quoting her again, the next morning there were little footprints all over the floor. So that was to show her that there really were little people. And I thought that was a great story. And then she told me a third one. And it was, you know, her mother, which would have been, another previous generation. And the mother had told her, and again I'll quote it, she and her little cousins had a trail around where they lived. They would follow it up deep into the mountains to play. Once they saw six little people in a circle. She said in all her life she only saw one girl. The rest had just been boys. So those were the three stories I got out of this wonderful connection that was made because we just happened to know a mutual friend.
Wow. Well, I think one of the things that has intrigued me about the little people, and most people, when you say little people, they're talking about midgets and dwarfs, and these are smaller than the midgets and dwarfs that we see in circuses and around. And
yeah, people get it confused. They sometimes think that they're fairy size. They're not that either. They're typically like 3 feet or just under 3 feet tall, and they're perfectly proportioned, so they're definitely not dwarfs.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I have felt the presence of little people. I have never seen them, but I know they're there. And I do believe that they still are in existence today. And people when they see them, do think they're seeing fairies, elves, and gnomes and stuff like that. But they're actually, they're out there. And I think it's really important that people be aware that, that, you know, things that have been, you know, kind of shoved aside into myth and fable have a real relevance in the fact that they did exist. And like when we spoke last, the little people were all over the state of Tennessee. There have been huge graveyards that have been dug up by farmers that are these small skeletons that are little people. And apparently, according to archaeologists and stuff like that, they existed at the same time the giants did, which would take them way back in history. But they, just as giants still exist today genetically, so do the little people still exist today. And it does feel as though they do stay out of the flow of society as best they can, because I would imagine they just don't want to be looked at as a circus performer. They have their own reality, their own society, and they do, as far as I can tell, they do exist mostly in places where there are forests. At least that's what I have observed. I don't know what you've observed.
Well, of course, the mountains are covered with, you know, forest, but
yeah.
There's many stories where they find them in caves, like living in caves, and there's stories of them, you know, going underground to live. I was thinking about what you said about the history of Tennessee, which is adjacent to North Carolina, and there's a man, John Haywood, and he's known as, quote, the father of Tennessee history, and he said that the graves that were found in Tennessee were only about 2 feet in length and 14 inches broad and 16 inches deep. And they found all sorts of these kind of graves. I suspect that most of the little people were more than 2 feet tall, but when somebody dies, they kind of sometimes bunch up the bones. This particular father of Tennessee history said that they were typically 2 feet to, 2 feet to 3 feet tall. And that's what I pretty much have consistently had reports on. And they are oftentimes just described as being the size of a toddler.
Yeah, but the ones that of course, the skeletons that I've heard of, well, now that's silly. I was going to say the skeletons I've heard of were very slender, but then, of course, any skeleton is very slender.
I'm sorry, I laughed.
No, it's true. But they are slight of build, I guess is the best way to put it, at least as far as what I have observed and what I have heard as far as myths and tales. And it does feel as though, you know, it's sort of like Bigfoot. There are of course, with Bigfoot, there aren't the sightings in the same way, because the Cherokee little people that you write of, they were discovered or their abodes were discovered on a college campus when doing reconstruction.
Right, and I do write about that in the book, Cherokee Little
uh-huh.
People Were Real. And probably the most memorable image from the skeleton stories is that one of the professors kept a small skull on his desk as a conversation piece, and he always said it was from the Indian mound, and he said it was a child skull. And then a high school English teacher picked it up and looked at it closely and said, "This is not a child's skull. It has all its wisdom teeth." And as most people know, you have to be 18, 20, 21 to be having wisdom teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I do feel that they are still out there. And
listen,
we have
Bigfoot in this area. We have Bigfoot. They are huge. We see evidence
mm-hmm.
of them, and every once in a while, people will actually, you know, see one.
Mm-hmm.
Those creatures are huge. So if something like that can remain out of sight almost all the time, then it would be no small challenge for little people to stay out of view in comparison.
Of course not. And from you know, what you've said and what Indian stories have related is that they lived, a lot of them lived underground or in caves.
Correct.
So that they were, you know, kind of camouflaged their existence to a certain point. And certainly, you know, if they're living on the fringes of society, they're investigating. And, you know, it reminds me of, as a child, I read a series of books called The Borrowers. And are you familiar with that series?
I am.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't
yes.
that small. But they were tiny people, and you kind of, you know, you wonder, is there a connection between them and the little people we see today that are midgets and dwarfs? I mean, is there a connection, or are they just very different segments of different species, I guess? I mean,
well, they're definitely
they
their
be...
own genetic line, for sure. But the most, I'll jump in again with the Cherokee stories. The most recent one I've gotten from somebody was at the very end of May, and I was contacted by a Cherokee man who, you know, is about 70 years old, and he related a story when he was a young man that they went hunting, bear hunting, and...
Uh-huh.
There was a terrible storm that came up, so they took cover for the night. They found a small cave, and they waited out the storm. Well, he was sound asleep, and I actually can quote him on this. During the night, my friend Kenny woke me and told me not to say a word because there were little people outside the cave. We lay there quietly in the dark listening. They spoke in old Cherokee. Today's Cherokee speaks slang, so Kenny nor I could understand what they said, only a word or two. The little people were there all night. The next morning outside the cave, there were little footprints about the size of a 5 or 6 year old. So that's the most recent story from a Cherokee person, you know, that I've been told since the book came out. And if it hadn't been damp, they probably wouldn't even see the footprints because, you know, little people don't weigh much and they're not going to press down and leave heavy footprints like a Bigfoot would do. So the fact
that's
that
true.
The ground was wet made it possible for them to see the footprints.
In I know that there are stories, the Ojibwe, they have stories of little people. Almost, you know, I'm saying almost because I can't tell you if it was exactly every Native American tribe has stories of them, but a great many of them do speak of the little people. And it would...
I found this...
Would,
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
No, you just inspired me to tell you a story. It's not about a Cherokee little person, but when I was out on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, which is Sioux country, again, I got to meet another young woman, and I think she was probably about the same age. And her grandfather had been a medicine man or a shaman, and her older brother was. And she clearly had abilities, but though she had no title or anything to go with it. And she told me kind of an, you know, interesting story. Again, I've got the stuff in front of me, so I can give you their words. She said, when I was like 14 or 15, we were fishing way out in the country with my grandmother. We put her on a bank, sitting on her chair, fishing. Then we went further down the river so we wouldn't disturb her. We were swimming and playing around in the water, and the next thing you know, we hear splashing in the water. So we look over and saw something go in the water. So we went swimming back to my grandmother. She told us in our language not to go too far, to stay at a distance so she could see us. So we stopped and started to go back, and we heard something like stuff being thrown in the river. We turned around, and my grandmother had caught a fish, and it was trying to break the line, and it was going down the river. She told us to go catch it. So we caught the big catfish, and we took it back up to her, and that's when we noticed little bitty footprints in the mud going up the bank. They were 2 or 3 inches long and looked like human footprints.
Yeah.
So that's a different
wow.
tribe in a different part of the country, you know, with the same kind of story with the little people. And she added another one. her brother-in-law and his buddies were on the same creek at another time, and they found a little cave in one of the banks of the creek or the river, and they went inside and they found little drums and bows and arrows and a quiver or an arrow case, and they took them and they went to show their grandfather, and the grandfather told them to, you know, take it back and to leave their stuff alone. After that, they had a little bit of trouble with the little people. They found their pigs and chickens dead. And that sounds really terrible, but you think about the size of the people, and they want to make sure the big people don't mess with them and their stuff. You can almost understand why they might have chosen to do that.
Absolutely. And actually, in all actuality, if they did make themselves known, they would lose their freedom. So that probably. You know, we'd create preserves for them, and then there would be tours, and then they would be like in a zoo. You know, the great wisdom for them not making themselves known. When I lived in Westchester, and I lived there in New York. I lived there for about 50 years, and in the town next to or very close to that I lived in New Rochelle there was a road, and on that road were four houses that were built for little people, specifically for little people. And you'd be driving down the road, and you'd see the big house, the big house, the big house, the big house. And then suddenly the houses were shrunk in stature. Everything was to proportion, but for somebody who was only about 3 feet tall. And there were three or four houses there. And it was kind of fun. Every now and then when somebody came to visit, you know, we would say, you want to see something really neat? And these houses were lived in. We never saw anybody coming or going. You know, I guess if you sat outside and waited long enough, you might. But everything was shorter. The doors were shorter. The windows were shorter. Everything was proportionately shrunk down to size so that someone, you know, the doors were only about 3 feet tall. So, and all we knew was they were for little people. And to this day, I can't tell you if they were midgets or if they were little people or if they were, you know, I can't tell you. All I know is that there were three or four houses there that someone had the money to build and, you know, and they were lived in. So, and certainly, you know, I couldn't have lived in one of them, and I'm short. So, you know, there are things in society today that are subtly just there, and you don't know an explanation for it. You don't know who built them, but they're there and they're lived in by obviously little people. So, I mean, this was an area where houses were expensive. So, you know, nobody would just, you know, build three or four of them for kicks and leave them sitting empty there. So, I do believe that. Now, I don't know if they were people that worked for a circus and therefore that's where they retired or something like that. Have no idea. And I lived there for 50 years. You know, you'd think I would have had, you know, now I think, why the
now
heck
you
didn't
would,
I
Now you would have gotten to the bottom of it. Now you would know.
Oh, I would have gone up and rang the doorbell, you know. you're absolutely right, you know. How come those things happen to us, I wonder, you know, when you see something that you know is so profound and you just think it's cool and you move on and you don't pay attention to it, and then you realize that there might be something quite profound connected to it.
Right. Well, you've triggered a memory of something I wrote about in the book, Cherokee Little People Were Real, and I've never talked about it on the radio before or any kind of program before, but there was a little person, and he was known as, I think they even had his last name, Toby Bryson and his family. They were little people. They had a little house. Everything was in, you know, small proportion like you're talking about. And the head of the household, Toby, actually worked for somebody, and he drove a truck, I believe, but he had to drive it standing, and he would look out in the space, you know, within the steering wheel. So that gives you an idea of his size.
Wow. you know, it just, you triggered another memory. I'm wondering, Tom Thumb, I don't know if he was a midget.
Oh, Tom Thumb. Tom Thumb, and he was with the, and he was with the circus, and he may have been one of those. There is a community, and I've never been to it, but there's supposed to be a community in Florida where midgets live, and many of them, you know, were, you know, originally in the circuses.
Yeah, he was. I'm looking. He worked with P.T. Barnum, and I'm looking to see how tall he was, because he was small. Ah, he grew to 2 feet 3 inches in height.
Oh, that's really small. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he worked with Barnum. He died of a stroke when he was 46 years old, but and he married another midget who was, I think he was a midget. You know, at least you know,
he
that's
was a midget.
What I
googled. He was a midget.
So would this
I guess
be considered?
He could have been a little person. Who knows?
Yeah. But it was he made a fortune. And my gosh, he toured with Barnum for, you know, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a his parents were normal size.
Hmm.
But yep. You know, you're talking, you know, if somebody wants to take a look at what a real little person looks like, that's Tom Thumb,
right.
General Tom Thumb. But you know, you they've got to be out there today, and you do wonder. I mean, on TV now they have radio shows that, you know, Little People, Big World, and then there are there's another show that deals with a whole bunch of women midgets or dwarfs. I think it's midget and dwarfism. They're kind of, they mix the two together, yet they are different. But Tom Thumb did marry Lavinia Warren, and she herself was also a very little person. But you know, when you talk about these little people have merged with society and have lived as normal as they can lives, and yet the little people that you write about in your book with the Cherokee, they're very different. They shun society, and talk for just a minute about the dwellings that they discovered at the university when they were digging, because it's fascinating.
Western Carolina University is like nestled in the mountains of Western North Carolina, and when I did the book, it was inspired by meeting the men who had been involved in construction on that campus, and it began to seem like any time they cut into what was supposed to be virgin land, they would find these little tunnels, and the tunnels are typically, let's say, 2.5 feet wide and 3.5 feet tall, square cut with a rounded arch top to make it more, give it more strength. And those were found all over the campus. I assume that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that today they do exist.
Well, I'll tell you what, and you might find this interesting. I started investigating the little people in North Carolina in 2000, which is now 21 years ago. And it wasn't until August 15th of 2017 that we got a picture that may very well be a little person. And what happened was that friends of mine who live like maybe two ridges over from where I live at the top of the ridge, and it's a narrow single-lane gravel road to get up there. and they have a game camera by their one-lane road at the top of the mountain ridge. And some kind of a bird or something triggered the game cam to go off. And off in the distance, there is this little figure. And the couple debated among themselves whether they were going to share it with me. And the man thought that it was the backside of a slightly crouched nude figure with dark hair, and the woman thought it might be a spirit or a ghost.
Uh-huh.
When I look at this picture, it was in August, so it was hot. It looks like a nude or almost nude figure from the back with long hair, and you can actually see like a band, like if somebody was carrying something with a strap across the shoulder. It's not a real clear picture, so I can understand why they didn't know if it was a spirit or something real. So what I did was I went and got known ghost photos, and the one that I actually posted on the website is a ghost on its hands and knees playing with a real live breathing child. So you can see the ghost and you can see the child. Now, if something is alive, you can turn up the intensity, and anything alive will go into the magenta range. A ghost will stay in, white or clear or translucent.
Right.
I did the same thing with the little person. The little person went to magenta. So that told me it was something living and breathing and not just a spirit in the woods. But that was 17 years after I started investigating this stuff. That's how difficult it is to get any kind of an image of a little person.
Well, let's face it, they do blend into the scenery really, really well.
Wonderful friends because they went and measured it. The man went out to the tree where they saw the little person, and he kept hunkering down until his wife could tell him that it was the same height as where the little person had been. And then he used a tape measure, and it turned out to be 3 foot 3 inches, which again falls into that category that we think of with the little people.
Yeah, I I garden. Well, did garden. I had huge gardens in Connecticut when I was there, and I would go out and I would talk to the little people. I swear that they were there and that they did help with the garden. I would find areas where I was pretty sure something had been done, but I hadn't done it. But I never saw anybody. But I believed that they were there to the point where I literally talked to them every day. You know, kind of like, you need to do something with this plant because it's not doing whatever it should be, and let's beef this one up, and I would sprinkle grain out. I would sprinkle offerings, so to speak. I never thought I was talking to spirits. I thought I was talking to physical entities, elementals maybe. I'm wondering if maybe sometimes they have been mistaken as elementals as opposed to little people, and that's maybe how some of the aspect of elementals came into our vocabulary and into our mythology.
That's very possible.
I firmly believe they were there, I'm fine with people thinking I'm crazy. I'm old enough now so that, if they want
you
to tell
get
me
away
I'm
with
a little bit. Sure.
gotcha.
But and I had a garden that was literally built on a gravel pit, and yet in 1 year it looked like it had been established and it had been there for decades.
Hmm.
And I wasn't slamming Miracle-Gro on everything or anything like that. It was like, I was out there in the middle of the night, doing stuff. And I was, you could say part of it was that my intention and the energy that I was putting into it was helping things grow and stuff like that. And that's probably partially the truth. But I truly believe that there were little people out there helping me too. So I do believe they're still around. I do believe that they you know, if they were discovered to be a culture or a tribe or a species that we've been overlooking, and Lord knows humanity is very arrogant, and often if they've decided something doesn't exist, it doesn't exist even if they're looking at it, you know, I think that it would destroy them. They would become a sideshow, and they're smart in not becoming that, because certainly when you see what we've done with indigenous people in lots of places, we've created sideshows out of them rather than allowing them their privacy to do whatever is appropriate for them as a tribe or as a species or as a race. So, but it's exciting, and I think that lots of times they're around small animals, they're around babies, they love baby anything, and I probably because it's small, but I think that they are a lot more frequent visitors to our realm than other people think. I don't think they're interdimensional. I think they're indigenous to the planet, personally.
Oh, well, they may have originally originated from way out there. I know the many of the Cherokee believe that they themselves originated from the Pleiades, and all their stories of that origin are in stories that they refer to as the Seven Sisters, which equate with the seven stars of the Pleiades. So some of their, you know, origination stories are hidden in stories like that. And they believe they came from the stars, so they believe the little people ultimately way back came from the stars too.
I find it fascinating that there has been talk of them. It's the 1800 period, from late 1700s to late 1800s. That seems to be where there have been great discoveries of first giant bones and then the little people bones. And it seems to be in the 1800s. I don't know if maybe that's when we were digging up the ground to the point where we did find all of this, or it's a time frame where there was a plethora of discovery of giant bones or little people bones. In mounds, in huge grave sites where there obviously had been a war of some sort, so that there's a time frame where we were digging up the evidence of this, and yet it has not become a part of our history or our culture.
Interesting. I'll jump here. You love history, and so let me. I would never tell it in this kind of order, but I think you can follow it. I was contacted by a man who lives in eastern Tennessee. It's the part of Tennessee that's actually north of North Carolina. And he said that he had little people living on his land, and he didn't sound like a crackpot. He sounded very legitimate. And so I did go up there with Evelyn Gordon, who's also involved with this website, and spent several hours with him. And he has like 200 acres on high hills or bluffs overlooking a river. And part of his land is like open pasture kind of land with these really quite large hills. And the rest of it's all wooded. And he said the little people live in the wooded part. But I kind of want to jump to something I stumbled on when I was following up things he had said. He said that his family had some Uchi Indian in them. Now, the Uchi Indians have pretty much disappeared, and they were quite a unique tribe. They didn't fit the normal North American Indian tribe. They could speak different languages. They were people who had fair skin and light-colored eyes, and they really looked more European than Indian, and that's why they pretty much have disappeared. But anyhow, he has the Uchi line in his family, and so when I was doing research to follow up on his stories to see if there really was legitimacy to things he was telling me, I came across some research by a man named Richard Thornton, and he's one of the country's leading experts in southeastern Indians, and he wrote Well, he's got something called the People of One Fire. I think that's a website he has. He had just discovered and had just posted that back in B.C. time, like 2500 B.C., somewhere along in there, there was a massive flood in Ireland, western France, and western Spain, and many of the people fled the country because they didn't want to drown. Some of those people actually ended up on the at the Savannah River Basin. And then from there, some of them went up the river and ended up in Tennessee. What is interesting is that this tribe of Indians, the Hoochies, are so different than all the other tribes. And this man describes the little people on his land as looking European, not like the Cherokee little people. He even described their dress quite differently, more like the Lederhosen the Germans would wear, or I always get cavalry and cavalry, the two words mixed up. But the soldiers with the double-breasted blue shirts with the buttons, he said the men often wore those kind of shirts. And I just found it interesting that they may very well have been the little people of Ireland that came with some of the regular people from Ireland who were fleeing the flood back in, it was 2250 B.C. It's just something
to ponder.
Yeah,
that's the first thing that came to mind, that these can be the wee people of the Irish that, you know, are traditionally spoken of in Irish history going way, 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 way back.
Right. So now that can explain the ones that are on this man's land, but the description of them is totally different than the Cherokee ones, so who knows?
Yeah, and especially with the ones that were found here in Tennessee, of course from the bones you can't really tell, but you kind of wonder, you know, why they didn't take DNA samples, why they didn't, you know, of course, in the 1800s, they didn't have that, but we
that was
have...
not an option.
No. I just, you know, I keep asking, no matter what I get thrown up at, no matter what anybody throws into my lap, it's like, why? What, you know, you got to ask questions, and I've only started to asking questions in the last probably 10 years or so. Usually I would just accept history as history, but I seem to be questioning everything these days, and it's something that you've done for decades, and I think to myself often about, you know, the time I have wasted just accepting facts and not checking them out is frustrating.
Well, you've got to jump on a whole lot of people already, so don't worry about it. You just proceed with your curiosity and see what you can learn.
It makes our world such a spectacular place to live in. I mean, when you think that you can prove there were giants, you can prove there were little people, you can prove so much stuff that you know, 100 years ago you couldn't. And it does change the dynamics of the possibilities and the potentialities that exist today. It's exciting. And,
it is.
And you, I mean, the little people, I mean, I am fascinated by them. I would love to find a place where there was a feeling that they actually frequented. And not so sure I put out cameras as much as I would, you know, put out offerings, and you know, it's what you did with the gifts that you did with Bigfoot. You know, the wonderful experience you had with the fact that, you know, they would take a gift and then they would return it to you so you could give it to somebody else. I mean, what a fabulous thought.
I know, and Joan Ocean, who is the dolphin expert in the world, she had encounters with Bigfoot here in this country when she was visiting, because she lives in Hawaii all the time. And one of the women that she knew there made a muumuu, you know, those kind of, I don't know, house dresses type things that were popular a bunch of years ago. and made one for one of the Bigfoot women. And there were other Bigfoot women, so she, you know, was, I may have this story mixed up a little bit, but it's like she was going to make more, and it was like one, you know, just one, that's enough. And there's been other occasions where, you know, more is not needed. It's just the basics. And, you know, we come from a culture where everybody wants more.
Yeah.
You want another story?
I think the other thing I wanted to mention, well, yes, but there is also, there's a mystical clan of Hawaiian people known as supernatural stoneworkers, and they are considered to be little people. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, and the, I don't know if the name will come to me right away. It starts with a K. It won't come to me right now. Just the way it is. But yes, they have a race of little people in Hawaii. And there's a story that I'll never be able to tell because the family wants their privacy. But I got to meet a little person, and genetically her mother was Cherokee and her father was Hawaiian. So all we could think of was, you know, perhaps a recessive gene where there'd been a mingling with the little people. And it,
mm-hmm.
when the two came together, they had a child that was like a little person. And they never would confess any of this to their pediatrician or to the doctor because this person had seemed to did not have the immune system for our kind of germs. And
mm-hmm.
so she couldn't last very long in school. She'd have to learn from home. There were other things that were kind of unusual. And if the doctor had been told a little bit about the genetics, if he would be open to this, it might have
mm-hmm.
explained some of the things. She couldn't stand bright lights and would always wear the sunglasses. And the early stories of the little people are being underground. And the original stories were that they were called the moon people by the Cherokee because they would only come out at night to farm their, you know, collect things from their garden because
uh-huh.
the light bothered them. So the fact that she just didn't want to go anywhere without sunglasses made you wonder if that just kind of gave support to it also.
Well, I can tell you the name of the little people in Hawaii was K-A-U-A-I. Kauai?
No, I know that's not the way it's said.
Okay, well, I don't know how it's said, but it's K-A-U-A-I. K-A-U-A-I.
Kahuni? I don't know.
I don't either. They were also called were travelers. But you know, there are legends and stories of little people in every culture, and it's a fascinating topic, and in Scotland too. It's fun, you know, when you have children, you want to give them the magic of your environment, and I always used to tell my son about the little people, and you know, they would be watching, and if he didn't put his socks away, that they'd steal the socks and stuff like that. You know, I made up stories, but yet the little people came to mind for a reason, because I'd heard of the little people when I was growing up, and we lived in Minnesota for a number of years, and we were on a ridge that overlooked the Mississippi, and it was just woods from our house down to the Mississippi, and it was a long way. And I know that there were times when my mother would say to us, you know, the little people have been around, we've got to put out food for them, and the food was always gone. Now, I didn't know if raccoons ate it, or if the cat ate it, or the dog ate it, or if the little people got it. But But the element of little people has been a real part of my life, you know, since ever I can remember. So I do think...
Well, the stories around here with the feeding of the little people, there are still some today among the Cherokee who will put food out for the little people. And I hear stories that if they forget to do it, that suddenly pebbles would be thrown on their roof as if to remind them that they've been forgotten. So that fits in with your stories too.
Yeah, no, it's really, I life is full of magic if you let it be there. And I think this is, I think they're real. I do believe they're still around. And I think that they've done a great job of hiding so that we haven't corrupted them. Obviously, they don't have iPhones and stuff like that, so that they are one with nature, and being one with nature means that nature really protects them in many ways. But I think it was a good idea for you to bring this topic up, because this is something that is still with us today. This is not a part of history. This is something that is still very much alive and well here in our world today. And like Bigfoot, it's remained elusive so that we can't corrupt it. And it really speaks to the magic of the planet and what life is. And I think that stories of the little people and stories of Bigfoot, and especially I have to endorse like heck your book on Bigfoot. And is it Bigfoot Beyond the Footprints? Is that the name of the book?
That's correct.
One of the best books I ever read, it's a coffee table book so that you can read through it in one day if you really want to spend wonderful time with it and have Kleenex handy, because you'll cry because some of the stories are so sweet and so beautiful. And it gives you another aspect of Bigfoot, and it, I don't want to say humanizes Bigfoot, but it takes away the fear that so many people seem to be planting on Bigfoot or Yeti or Sasquatch. I mean, you have hit upon an aspect of this culture that I don't want to say humanizes them, because it doesn't humanize.
It humanizes, no, it does, but only in the good sense. You know, right
yeah.
now we humans are acting really bad, or too
yeah.
many of us are, and so it's almost an insult to say you're acting like a human. But if you think about the humanity of humans and being kind and taking care of each other and that type of aspect, then it applies. And that book does reveal that type of humanity in the Bigfoot.
Well, I truly believe that historically speaking, everything seems to be traced back to the last ice age. And I would think that maybe the little people in Bigfoot came from before the last ice age, possibly a time when culture was kinder and gentler and there was not the aspect of war and power struggles where we were one with nature and one with each other. And in those kind of times, if that kind of society ever existed, I would think that we lived in harmony. And it feels to me as though Bigfoot and the little people are still harmonious within themselves. And certainly when you read your book on Bigfoot and how they helped soldiers, they helped to heal people, they had far more genuine, giving, loving, kinding spirit than a lot of humans at the time. And, you know, I if I were a Bigfoot, I wouldn't want to be, you know, a member of society. But when you think about how they try to chase people away, they throw rocks and they throw sticks. They don't have guns and they don't hurt people and they don't attack people. And if they do attack, they throw rocks, for Pete's sakes. I mean, it's nothing to be afraid of.
The only stories that you hear where they've gotten violent is where somebody shot at them. You know, they don't much care for that, and I don't think that we would either.
No. But still, there's not, you know, they haven't ripped people, you know, limb from limb or anything like that. There's no reports of that. So why people are out to try to capture one or you know, kill one. And one of the cool things in your book was that from some of the fur, they were able to detect the DNA and,
right.
and tell the people what the DNA was.
That was the research of Dr. Melba Ketchum. She took a lot of grief when she first did that, was ostracized by the academic community or scientific community. Since then, there have been people with, you know, medical-type credentials or scientific credentials who have said that, yes, she was right. And based on the DNA, she found, and the other ones did too, that the maternal side of the Bigfoot is human, and the paternal side or the daddy side is some unknown primate, and they can't match it up with anything else. That is more difficult to find because, like, if you take DNA, take the hair from a Bigfoot and you send it off to have it analyzed, if it doesn't have the root connected to it, they won't be able to get the paternal DNA because that's only in the nuclear part of the cell. And so, anyhow, it's half human, so I sometimes refer to them as our distant cousins.
Well, I think that the society as a whole has to be reeducated, hopefully, into a kinder, gentler time. And certainly it's not current, but I have great hopes for society. I truly do. And but your book on Bigfoot, probably the best. I mean, I've given it as gifts because it's such a beautiful, beautiful book and story.
I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Well, it is. And your website, I just noticed the time. Your website is Skyships Over Cashiers. It is a fabulous website. It has articles on just about every topic known to man, and then some. You've even become cosmic because you're looking into Mars and the Moon and all sorts of things. So, you do go UFOs to unicorns and everything in between on the website, and the material there is just so fascinating and so well documented that it's a pleasure to read through it. And the archives, you can get lost in your archives, for Pete's sakes. You have decades of archives there.
Sometimes I have trouble relocating something I've written. I know it's there, and I don't remember what year it was or where it was. So I spend a lot of time digging myself trying to bring something back up. I want to end real quickly with a cute story. The man in Tennessee, let's see if I can tell it fast. He had men working to put up fences around his pasture land, and one day they just ran off, and they never came back. He thought something was really, really wrong. And they clearly were from another country. If I had to guess, I would guess they were probably Mexican. I do not know. But they had language limitations. And they had heard singing in the fog. And he had talked about how when it's foggy, the little people will go up to the top of one of those hills. And it's a big hill. I went with him in the truck to get up there, so it wasn't like an easy climb. And there was still a ring where you could see where they would do their ring dance up at the top of this hill. And these guys were freaked out because, they heard the singing from the fog. When they asked him, they were afraid he was a wizard, and they started to ask him some questions when he ran into them in town. And that just scared them all the more. He wasn't the only one that heard the little people singing. And when we were up there, it's not real clear, but you can see a little footprint beneath the big tree up there. Again, you know, it was kind of dry, and if it's dry and they're little people, they don't leave much of an impression. But, I got to see the path to the entrance to the where they go underground. He tells about the teenagers are the ones that cause the most mischief. They'll get up in the tree and then swing down so they're looking right in your face. They do that with him. I don't think they would do that with most people. But
oh, how cool. How very cool.
So we'll end with that,
that is exciting. Well, yeah, and thank you so much for being here again and sharing your information and your website. and your work with us. Always, always, always a joy to talk to you, and thank you so much for being here today.
Okay, you have a nice rest of the day. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye now. And thank you, everybody, for being here. Please visit us on YouTube and on Rumble. And if you like what you see and like what you hear, please subscribe, because that's how we know you're out there. And that's how we know that we're giving you cool things to think about, to touch into, and to investigate. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.